hello everyone here back on the Subscribe blog. I have a friend from the lands of good beer, great food, and never-ending sunshine.
Really? It's as wet, cold, and miserable in Northern Ireland as it is in Seattle.
He is from the land of love and unity, Northern Ireland.
Oh, dear Lord. Wow, so we're going to start this off with an enormous lie and continue all the way through like
that. Yes, so also okay. known as on Twitter as Blowdart. What does that mean?
It was... So when I was at university, there were a lot of multi-user dungeons, and trying to find a unique username to play under was difficult.
Yes.
So I found that, and it kind of has stuck with me since then. Although that's also bad because, you know, certain of my nefarious UK friends will register Blowdart accounts on various websites, and then everyone assumes it's me.
Yes.
There's a Blowdart on Pinterest, for example, and I don't have a Pinterest account, but everyone thinks it's me, and yeah.
Yes. Well, I'm going into every little place that shows up as a social thing or something, or at least make sure that I have my Clemens vehicle even if I don't use it. So
yeah, this is true. I mean, the only reason I'm on Facebook is because my friends threatened to register for me.
So well, threaten and register and imposters and all those variations.
Yes.
Are very key and core to what you do.
So I was thinking about what I do this morning and how I would describe it succinctly. And if you're following my Twitter feed, you'll have seen the conclusion I come to. When anyone in the Azure application platform and tools team comes up with a new idea or comes up with a new feature, I pop up and ask, would you like security with that?
Yes.
So I'm a security clippy.
A clippy? Oh, so you kind of attach yourself?
Yeah, I pop up, yes. I annoy them until they hit the dismiss button or they do what they're supposed to do.
So
hopefully the second.
Yeah, so security is, so you're responsible for security on the specific .NET? Frameworky pieces.
Ooh, that's interesting. So core.NET belongs to Windows.
Okay.
Everything that sits on top, ASP.NET, MVC, Web API, Katana, everything like that, WCF even, media services, IIS, all falls under AAPT. And so I look after the ASP.NET stuff, Web API, Katana bits, SignalR, all the command line tools, the stuff that plugs into Visual Studio, those various bits and bobs. And we have another couple of members on our team who look after things like IIS and media services and all the bits and pieces that split off.
So the world is split into, so there's a core CLR in .NET, which is owned by
Windows.
It's owned by Windows.
Yep.
Then there's server stuff.
Yes. So the server stuff.
And we own all that.
Yeah, server stuff is mine.
Yes, and then there's which is actually, well, it's the more interesting, more direct place to hack.
That's true, but mostly these days people are hacking applications rather than frameworks because it's the applications that let security die, mostly.
Yeah.
Sometimes we have some interesting things that affect the framework. We had the padding Oracle attack around Fusted, which is a framework problem. But mainly, it's easier to attack applications
because they are not as because the frameworks are typically run by very many and
people.
Well looked after.
Yes, people that actually think about security from the ground up.
Mm-hmm. So what's our so if I come up with a wonderful idea for a frameworkable thing?
Yes.
What happens?
Aside from, you know, we try to put you off the idea.
Yes, so
because I don't want you coding. That scares me.
Because whatever line of code I write, that could be the prettiest problem.
Yes. So we could take, SignalR is a great example. So
yeah, that's
SignalR
a great example.
It was recently released. And so what happens is the SignalR team pop up and say, hey, we've written this code, and this is what it does. And now we need to think about the bad things that mm-hmm. may happen to it. It depends. So SignalR, they had a basic framework first, and then we looked at that and threat modeled and discovered where we thought there were things that could be improved, and they went away and improved them, and lo and behold, we get a release.
So threat modeling, let's play that slow.
Okay.
Well, because it's obvious for you, it's semi-obvious for me, it's unnecessarily obvious to everybody.
Threat modeling is a thought exercise more than anything else, and threat modeling APIs and frameworks is a little bit different to threat modeling applications. So for threat modeling applications, we have a bunch of tools out there. The SDL tool site has a downloadable threat modeling tool mm-hmm. where you scope out your application, you draw it within Visio, and then you draw trust boundaries between the various component parts, and you press a button and it generates threats, and it tells you how you can probably mitigate against them as well.
Mm-hmm.
For an API,
we'll have the URL for the SDL site. Right
will here. You? Is it going to flash up here?
It's going to flash up right here. The
okay.
back box. Yes.
Yeah. Are you going to have something flashing up my name as well?
Yes, I will.
Okay.
That has already happened.
Has it?
That was 5 minutes ago.
Oh, okay. Shove it out of the way. All right. So, I warned you this was not going to be easy.
That's all good.
Yeah. So, and that's all well and good. But doing it for a framework is slightly different. And Adam Shostak is currently running down some thoughts about how to threat model APIs,
mm-hmm.
Which eventually he will publish. But Adam is Mr. Threat Modeling.
Mm-hmm.
But we basically sit in a room and we look at where data is going to come in. We look how it throws through an API or a framework. We look at what gets spat out on the other side. And we decide what naughty things people can do with it.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, some of the cookies and tickets that SignalR were producing, you could easily change
mm-hmm.
just with the text editor. And you know, you might be able to see some things you're not supposed to see. So we ended up making sure that they were signed, so if they were tampered with, it could be detected and ignored.
Okay.
So the SignalR guys have been having a lot of fun with it. You know, we kicked off 3 or 4 formal sessions, and as we went through each one, they were logging all the bugs on GitHub so people could see. And eventually we came up with a nice Word document rather than a diagram of here's what we've considered, here's how we've mitigated it. You plug that into our beloved SDL tool and draw a couple of diagrams, click a button, and eventually it gets checked by someone who does this full time, and
mm-hmm.
you're able to release your code.
So there's a process that we follow, so it's this SDL process that
yes.
is that is a conscious tax that everybody's paying, but it's not just a chore, but it's something that you actually get something out of.
Yes, I would hope so. Otherwise, people will try their best to avoid it.
Yes. So the so effectively you get analysis of with experts like you.
Yes. Or roadblocks. It depends how you want to view it.
Well, you are. I think you are you are evil-minded enough to find.
yeah. Okay. I can take that. That's fine.
You're evil-minded enough to find the holes or the potential holes.
The potential for holes.
And I think I think being somewhat evil-minded is a quality that you kind of probably have to have in that job.
Evil-minded,
right?
And cynical.
Yes, and cynical.
And cynical. I mean, I don't think, unless your code base is really, really small, there's always the possibility that there are things that you will miss. And so it's an iterative process. You do your threat modeling, you plug everything through the SDL, and then when something bad happens, you learn from it, and you incorporate that into your next release threat model.
So we plugged whatever we could find,
mm-hmm.
SignalR.
Yeah.
Give me two examples of things that we
so we
have
had,
found.
We had the unsigned ticketing, yes, or
yes.
cookies. So that was fixed. And the other one was taking user input and using it as a key in a hash table. So that sorry.
How is that terrible?
There's what's known as a hash DOS attack. And ASP.NET was vulnerable to this last year, the year before last, and we patched that by changing the hashing algorithm behind a bunch of dictionaries to add a random factor into the key. Because otherwise what you can do is you can calculate a bunch of hashes that will collide, Mm-hmm. You shove that down as user input data. It gets turned into it gets shoved into the hash table, and because the hash table starts detecting collisions, it goes a little bit berserk, and your CPU spikes, and lo and behold, your website drops off.
Which means you don't your buckets get too deep.
Your buckets get too deep.
Is that kind of how it works then?
Kind of, yes, because it's trying to go further down to avoid collisions, and it just gets itself in a tizzy.
Interesting.
So when that came out with ASP.NET, all the collections were hardened.
Is that getting exploited too?
Yes. Oh yes, there's a bunch of conference presentations on this. In fact, the one that got us last year was at a German conference, just after Christmas, which made everyone's Christmas.
Oh yes.
I can't remember what the conference name was, but there was going to be another presentation this year, when it was suddenly my responsibility this time around, and it turns out the guy was just ended up attacking the Java and I think the Python collections rather than the .NET one, because he couldn't find a way to attack the .NET one, which made us very, very happy.
Well, that's, yes. So these, obviously there's a lot of stuff that we can't help with, it currently seems to be the favorite path of attack, and it's kind of the whole social engineering.
Yes, the social, so there was apparently a bunch of Xbox Live accounts got taken over, some high-profile Microsoft Xbox Live.
Yes, I heard that, yes.
By taking the last four digits of someone's social security number that had got leaked, ringing up the telephone operator, redirecting someone's phone number, then ringing up Xbox Live support and saying, can you ring me back at the phone number on record, which the attacker has redirected, I need to reset my password.
Holy moly.
Yeah, isn't that cool?
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, that's clever.
I know, I thought it was hilarious. So, I have to laugh at these things, because otherwise, you know, I get depressed and stabby.
Yes. So, but attacks, so what do we see, what do you see? And you're seeing, I mean, the interesting thing is we're in the Azure team, but you're actually responsible for something that's much more broad, because you're actually the security guy kind of on the hook for the foundational security properties.
Yes.
Of the stuff that people, like customers, run.
Yes.
On their own computers.
I'm lucky in that we have Levi, who generally looks at everybody's code as well, and Levi is also suitably evil and twisted and has been doing this for years. So Levi takes an awful lot of the weight off my shoulders, but when MSRC cases come in, they land up with me.
Do we get MSRC cases, so Microsoft Security Response
Center
cases, that are immediately related to hacking incidents?
We do. Those I would not deal with. I would deal with the ones where people are exploiting the framework or some of the underlying bits, but there have been MSRC cases that have involved hacking.
Because I think that's an interesting, when we look at the framework per se that the surface area we're responsible for.
Yes.
Is obviously humongously large already.
Yeah.
I mean, per se, even the things we're kind of exposing directly through, does it include things like the default ASP.NET template that we ship?
Yes, so the single page application templates I looked at when we were developing those. I have also looked at the guidance and the documentation around them, and a couple of guys who write all the documentation in MSDN usually let me cast a BDI over anything security related that they're doing. We have this horrible responsibility in that any demo code that we write and throw out there, people will cut and paste it because it's come from Microsoft, therefore people will assume
yes.
It's not demo quality, but it's actual production quality, which cannot be the case sometimes.
So when I go and go to Visual Studio, I say file new,
yes.
And I go and create the ASP.NET MVC for internet application.
Mm-hmm.
That thing you reviewed?
Not that one, because that was set before I joined.
Well, whoever.
Yes,
is your...
but it would have been reviewed. Levi
so that's,
would probably have reviewed it.
So that's so that.
So
is...
blame him, not me. No, nothing to do with me.
So what's the so so that is so as it comes out of the box.
Yeah.
That is reasonably
reasonably secure. There's an interesting balance that we have to have here between usability and security. If we had my way, nothing would be turned on by default whatsoever, and you'd have to make a hard decision, and you'd have a bunch of hoops to leap through to consciously enable things. But
like showing anything.
Yeah. It should just, you know, the default thing when you run it, it should just come off the page that says no. But that would make customers very unhappy.
Yes. So it is reasonably secure, but reasonably only in the bounds. For instance, there, if you install that app and you run it, that's obviously not running on, let's say, HTTPS.
Correct.
So that's HTTP, and that's somewhere surely noted in the instructions that says, well, that's not how you should run it.
Well, most websites, if you're not going to have authentication, are happy with HTTP.
Yes. Well,
as soon as authentication joins in, then you got HTTP.
Well, or you have an external, or you have an external token provider, and then but then you can intercept the tokens.
And that's true. And then we also have CSRF protection.
The what?
Oh, cross-site request forgery. So that's not turned on in the default templates.
Mm-hmm.
There's discussions going on about whether it will be for the next version.
Cross-site request forgery.
Yes. You brought up authentication. This dovetails quite nicely into it. So this is a way where someone could submit a form on your behalf from another website if you visit it.
Yes. Oh, interesting.
And we have support for mitigating that in both MVC.
Why is that
in
off?
Web forms. I don't know.
Interesting.
To be honest.
So you caught that the fact that the...
It's been known for a while, and there's a to-do somewhere about discussing whether turning it on
so that
would break
change.
Anything or
ah,
not.
Yes. See, because we always
we are hampered by backwards compatibility.
That's correct. I mean, if we give you a new version, then we can't break things.
Yes.
Yes, because people expect that their existing code is working. Yes, so we'll have to deal with that. So those templates are then kind of reasonably secure, and then the customer comes in and starts building their own code.
And making them less secure. Is this where you're going? I would never have said that. That plan is bad.
No.
Let's get him in trouble, ladies and gentlemen.
There's a secure baseline. There's now a reasonably secure baseline.
Yes.
What does the customer do? Now, the customer doesn't have you.
Correct.
Which is sad, but...
But probably good for them. Because it caused them end of headaches.
It's probably fantastic for their sanity, that's correct.
Yeah.
I think they can always get a sarcastic snark from you on Twitter.
That is true. Or even on Stack Overflow sometimes.
Yes.
Every now and again.
So, but as you find time, which you don't have any...
No, actually that's true. My Stack Overflow has been sadly lacking over the last 3 or 4 months.
But, so what shall... customers do then?
Read. There's a massive problem in that when you are taught in university, no one particularly cares about security. Even at tech ed, security is never particularly discussed. We always concentrate on new features. This is shiny and new. You should use this. You should use that. And there's very little discussion of why. So you go and you read about how to secure the framework that you're using, and then you put that into practice. There are a bunch of FX COP rules that exist for ASP.NET applications that you can use. There's a bunch of security resources that Mike Wasson and Rick Anderson continually write that get shoved up on the ASP.NET site or the MSDN site, but the problem is you have to keep continually reading because there's going to be something new that comes along. So it's not a matter of, I have secured my website according to all the best practices and it will never ever be hacked. No, you secured it at a point in time against everything that we knew about at that point in time. And that's a mistake that a lot of people make. So you look at some of the password hacks that have been going on where people's password databases get lifted and taken, and it turns out they're using an algorithm that they shouldn't have. That algorithm was probably fine at the time.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, 2-3 years down the line, they should have updated it, and they should have been planning to update it, and they should have put in support for changing the algorithm, but no one does that, no one thinks ahead.
So if you're running network-facing software, you should be vigilant.
Yes. That's you should be paranoid.
Paranoid. There's a one of the interesting trends that I keep seeing is, and you're as you say, you kind of peek into the Windows Azure security story also a little bit.
Yes.
Is that customers are, and this is now, it's a risky thing to say because it's kind of, this has a
Are you trying to get me fired?
No.
Okay.
But there's a slippery slope here. Maybe I'll get you off it. No.
I can't go back to the UK. If I get fired, I have to leave the country within 10 days. Don't do this to me.
So we see quite a bit that customers say, well, especially in Service Bus, because we're the bridging technology, because the on-premises things and
yes.
the cloud things, that customers are deeply concerned about, you know, cloud and security and how secure we can make things, and they're worried about their data being exploited and their data being stolen because it's sitting in our place instead of in their place.
Yes.
I find that my inclination, and I'll be to be frank, is I think we do quite a bit to do security with a number of folks who understand security pretty well, that is probably beyond the staffing capacity of most organizations that kind of do those things themselves.
I think that's fair. So we have my team that looks over the framework and looks at IIS and all the things that Azure runs on. Then Azure themselves, the portal team, the security stuff that hides behind it, have their own team and a large compliance team. And the Azure Active Directory folks, they have their own security team. We all talk to each other and prod each other with big sticks. And
GFS.
And try to be, oh, the GFS as well, yes. So even the hardware side of things and access to the buildings, they have hand scanners.
So wait, so GFS is, you can actually go to globalfoundationservices.com.
Really?
Yes.
Wow.
So I think it's globalfoundationservices.com, which is the Microsoft data center facilities, because Windows Azure doesn't have its own exclusive data centers. Microsoft has its
yeah,
own
Microsoft
data centers.
Yeah, Microsoft has its data
centers. And then we share those with, Azure shares them with Bing and with the other big,
Xbox
Live, and with the other big properties. So the GFS guys have hand scanners?
Yeah, have you not seen this? So you go over to the security section in Building 92, and they have this great big black box with like little pointy up sticks
mm-hmm.
like that for hand scanners. I have no access to data centers, which disappoints me greatly, because I think they're fun. Last year, we actually were decommissioning one, and as part of our annual charity drive in September, you could bid to be the person to pull the last plug out. I didn't win because the bidding got very, very large as it got towards the end of the auction week.
Oh, executives got into the picture?
Yes.
Yeah, that's
yeah, it was going into five figures, and I'm like, okay, no, I can't afford
it's
that
not,
anymore.
It's kind of not worth that.
I was willing to go up to $2,000 to be
wow.
the person to do it. Just pull the last thing out, and then I wanted to, you know, throw a rack server out a window. I don't know if they'd have allowed me to do that. But you were going to pull the last plug out of the last server and then flick the lights off in the data center.
So it is. Is it so to walk into, let's talk about some sensitive data. To walk into a doctor's office
yes.
and steal the computer
yes.
seems to be reasonably easy.
That's interesting. On Reddit today, there's an Ask Me Anything from a guy that does physical security testing for hospitals.
Mm.
It'll probably be over by the time
the video goes out. Absolutely.
But this just shows, you know, I'm hip and up to date because I'm on Reddit.
Mm-hmm.
Not as Blow Dart. I don't know who has that, but it's not me.
But so walking up into one of our facilities and steal a Blade server, that is somewhat harder.
It is, yes. From what I can gather, I don't know because nobody will let me near them.
Yes.
I can't think why.
There might be harm involved, I think, at the point where you actually go get close enough to the rack.
There are multiple layers of physical security in our data centers.
Yes. So that's a... But that's an interesting thing when I compare the there's a worry about the software security, but then also physical security. And I think if you think about cloud as a... Once you start thinking about cloud as also facilities that
yes.
you run stuff in, then we're taking that pretty seriously.
Yeah, I think it's fair to say that most external data centers will.
Yes, and so that's an interesting aspect there as well. What else do we have?
I have a shiny key contacts number card. This was given to me when I started my new role. This is the Wake Everybody in MSRC Up card. Cover the numbers.
Yes.
But this is my, let's send everybody's pager off because there's being a breach or an O-day that everyone needs to start working on now.
Oh, so you...
I haven't used it. I really don't ever want to be in a situation where I have to.
So when there is a... zero-day exploit that is based on anything.
Yes.
And it's not clear what that's based on.
Yes, I can...
Everybody gets rung up.
Everybody gets rung up. So, CanSec West was the weekend before last, which is a Canadian security conference. So, you have moose antlers on the keyboards trying to hack away at things. And it had an element of pwn to own, where companies will put up prize money for
mm-hmm.
their software to be exploited. So we had a couple of O-days dropped at that, and MSRC are there to take care of it and route it to the right people.
That gets me to the zero-day things. There seems to be a market for these.
There does. I think security people have differing opinions on whether selling vulnerabilities is a good or a bad thing, and whether companies should pay for vulnerabilities in their software, and whether things should be responsibly disclosed or just thrown out there. It's an ongoing argument.
But also what I mean is that there's a black market for those.
Oh yes, there's
yes.
a huge black market for those. In fact, there's also a huge commercial market for them. Vulpin is a company that basically makes their money out of O-days. They have an appliance that will promise to protect people against unreported vulnerabilities, because they will get signatures and they will be able to detect them on a
basis. They keep them
to themselves for a while, and then they also report they report them, but while the things are being examined and being fixed, they have a signature that they can use on their appliance to protect their customers.
There's been
some controversy over that business model, including who they sell the vulnerabilities to and what interesting governments they sell the vulnerabilities to.
I read a number a while back that, especially in crypto, like 90% of the money
yes.
is all government.
Yes.
And you never see the results of it.
We can talk about an O-day that a corporate has used that they have admitted to.
Mm-hmm.
Facebook.
Oh, really?
Facebook ran what is called a red team exercise, and I really hope never to be involved in this. It's where they paid an external company to penetrate their network so they would see how their security teams reacted. The guys actually presented about this at CanSec West for the first time publicly, the videos will eventually be available on the CanSec West site, but it's been written about in Wired as well. And they used an O-day that had fallen into their hands to facilitate that, and then they reported it to whoever it was. They didn't say whether it was Microsoft or
mm-hmm.
Adobe or Oracle or
interesting.
Any of the other usual suspects for these things.
So the best we can do is, someone finds an O-day, as it's called.
Yes.
Is that the right
thing
to say?
That is the right thing,
okay.
Yes.
So I always say zero day, but apparently.
But you're foreign.
Yeah, well, yes.
Yes.
Well, you're foreign too.
I'm less foreign.
You're just different foreign.
Yes.
Do you speak
proper English.
I hear some Irish accent there, though, however.
That's true, yes, but, you know, I was brought up with British English textbooks. There's no real Irish English, except, you know, we reinvent our own swear words.
Ah, yes, yes, yes. But
we won't go down that direction.
I hear some of it. Where was I?
I have no idea. We were talking about O'Days.
Yes. Oh, yeah. O'Days, right. So when we learn about a vulnerability,
yes,
it makes it an O'Day when it's actively being exploited.
It's actively being exploited, yes.
And all we can do then is to plug it as quickly as we can.
Plug it as quickly as we can. And that can take longer than some people would expect because we have backwards compatibility again. We've got to make sure that nothing breaks when we patch things.
Have we ever broken things because of that? That you can recall?
I can recall patches on Patch Tuesday breaking things, but that was years ago. And I don't know if it was security related or not. I can remember one which broke remote desktop, which was great when you were sitting at your desk patching things in a data center, and they rebooted a remote desktop, didn't come back up again. So
yes.
I can remember that. I don't know if we've done anything recently. There are probably certain circumstances where we've broken things where people have been relying on undocumented features.
Yes.
Don't rely on undocumented features, kids.
Because we might break them.
Yes. There's a reason they're undocumented.
Yes, because
it's not just laziness.
Yeah, that's right. That was interesting. That was really I liked that quite a bit.
Yeah, the Facebook presentation was hilarious because they started off and they didn't say that it was an exercise. So they started off talking as if it was a real breach. And they went on for about 10 minutes about how the things that they were discovering as they dug deeper and deeper and deeper. And everyone in the audience was just going, oh. And then he went, and then here's a picture of us planting the device. And what?
Mean people. So, well, thank you for, even though we haven't spoken about, I mean, I've seen there's now these wonderful reports coming around, the security reports for the whole team, and what are the things that are currently being changed.
You know,
changed,
most of mine are red.
yeah, so most of yours come in there. So
that's because I keep forgetting to update my boss about the things that have actually been completed.
So, I mean, and this is, so we're not, because there are zero, there's this O'Day thing, right? We know about things, and so we don't talk about those things. So
that's correct. We don't talk about anything until it's fixed.
Yes, so that's all very confidential. Yet, I think we had a very interesting discussion without going into any of those details of the day.
Yeah.
And that's, I think, very
isn't security fun, kids? We have to skirt around everything.
Yes. So if I wanted to be, you know, on the good side of security, what's the right path there?
Get your security person or get someone that cares enough about it involved at the earliest stage possible when you're designing features, preferably.
How do I become a security person? Because every company kind of needs one, right? And you said
development companies probably do. Yes, I don't know how I got into this. It's been so long. I think my first initial introduction to it was when I was working for a large streaming media company in the UK, which no longer exists because we were doing the whole .com thing and just burning through the money.
Yes.
That was fun. And
so you just became the guy?
I became the guy because we were mostly doing streaming media on Windows with the DRM built-in, which won't make me popular with your viewers. Hey, we were giving you free music, okay? Free music
videos.
Then the DRM would cut it off the day that it was released. So it was always pre-release.
Yeah.
So I think that was fair. And I didn't realize there was a Linux box in the data center. And it got hacked. And it was used to host porn. And illegal porn at that. So when we discovered that...
Then you became serious about it.
Yes. I think it usually takes something serious to actually
sharpen the senses and say,
to make you aware. Or you just start off as one of the people that likes breaking things, and then eventually you get bored with that and you switch to defense, which is what a lot of the MSRC people.
So you talked about Kensei. Are these talks available?
I think they're not available right now because it's only been a couple of weeks since the conference, but eventually they will be.
Okay.
It's like the Blue Hat conference we have here. We make an awful lot of those presentations public.
Oh, really?
Yes.
So they're somewhere on the Channel 9 side? Or
no, they'll be on the TWC side somewhere.
Okay. So we'll
flash the...
Here's
the URL.
Yes. We'll dig those up and make them available.
Yes.
Because everybody needs to have a security person. Everybody who writes software, especially on the server side, needs to have someone who is...
Yes, or web applications, frankly, because it's your web. It's your exposed applications that will be attacked.
Yes. And if there's anything of interest, and even if you can just be a vandal and destroy things...
Yeah, the BBC weather Twitter account got taken over today by pro-Syrian forces, and they were tweeting... They were tweeting really, really silly weather reports. It was things like the Saudi weather station is no longer available because they crashed it into a camel. Sometimes the vandalism is funny. Sometimes it's not.
Sometimes it's not, yes.
Yes.
Thank you, sir.
That's quite all right.
That was great fun, and I will see you. Well, you will see me, you will see us.
Yes, when I cross the other side of the road to avoid you.
Bye.
Bye.